when you get really clear on your identity and you have accountability where we're continually measuring, like, are our actions and our results lining up with who we say we are? That congruency creates this synergistic effect where 1 + 1 now equals 3 or 4 or 10. And that's really what we're aiming for, because that is the bedrock of everything else that we do in our business or any business.
Welcome to the Real Better Life podcast, where people that are writing stories worth telling share their knowledge, wisdom, and perspective to help you go further faster as you move to your better life. Over to your hosts, Dave Ness and Rob Elkemer.
Hello, welcome back everybody to the Real Better Life podcast. Dave Ness and
Rob Elkemer. What up?
Oh, here we go.
Hold on, get that closer to your...
Yeah, here, let me...
Hold on.
Let's do two mics. Ready? Okay, one, two. There we go. Nice. And we're off and running.
What a bunch of nerds.
Okay. Love how we start these. Hey, thanks for being with us today. And we've got a fun topic, which is how we creatively can think about and engage a tool that we refer to as accountability. And I'll be the first to say, as soon as we say that word, me included, I think humans in general have a little bit of an annoyance reaction to that, and maybe a little bit of a visceral reaction to that, because most of us have experienced accountability in such a way that has soured the idea and has kind of damaged our understanding and our view of what accountability can even be or look like.
Yeah.
And that's a shame, because it can be an amazing tool, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Yep.
And hopefully for the listeners, I think one of our takeaways is hopefully you listen to this and are refreshed and kind of rejuvenated with maybe a new way of thinking about accountability that is compelling and interesting.
Totally.
Rather than a downer.
Yeah. I think if there are only two things people take from this today, if one of them is potentially a mindset shift in a positive direction towards what accountability is and you know, how it's something that's for me and it's good for me, not something that's done to me. As a gotcha.
I get to do it, not I have to do it.
Yeah. And as somebody who's like painfully aware of, I don't like things that make me feel guilty or shameful, because I have enough of that already internally. Right? Like, accountability too often feels like a gotcha. So if we can maybe shift the perspective on that. And then the second thing is, we're going to unpack the Thrive Matrix, the Thrive Way Matrix, which is a structure of accountability that we've put together that I think accomplishes a lot of things that any good accountability structure should. And so we're going to talk about that. We'll go from high level theoretical to like really practical. And then my hope, my bet is that anybody who's listening to this is going to get some good practical, actionable takeaways.
Yeah.
Along with maybe a different mindset.
Yeah. And my guess is there's probably going to be two different listeners. One is potentially somebody who's in leadership and who's wanting to think about accountability and how they enter into accountability with the people that they get to work with. And so if you find yourself in that story, fantastic. We'll have some content and some tips, pro tips, and some ideas for you. And then if you're on the other end of the spectrum and you're going, I'm on a team and I want to show up in my best self and create my best life and lean in and also advance the team and be an amazing team player. So we're going to talk about that too. So we'll kind of address a little bit of both.
Yeah. So I think one of the first things we want to start off with like, hey, why are we talking about this today?
Yeah.
We're going to borrow something from our dear friend, Landon Lynch, who we were sitting down with last week.
Yep.
We tried to record a podcast episode, but I selected the wrong input and the whole thing was worthless. Sorry, Landon. And we have to re-record it. But one of my big takeaways from that is he said this very profound statement. He said, everything shifted once I saw that accountability was a tool for me to get what I want.
Yeah.
Right?
That was like mic drop within like the first 2 minutes.
Totally. And I want to highlight, like, it's a tool to help me get what I want.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think when we can shift our perspective to that, there's some structure and framework that has to be in place for that healthy version of accountability to exist, right?
Yeah.
And so a couple of those things, if I can just go through this quickly, I don't want to camp out on this too long and steal all of Landon's material. but he talks about this process of continuous improvement, which, let's face it, anybody who's actually going to embrace accountability, you're not going to embrace accountability unless you actually want to get better at something.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it wouldn't make any sense. Why subject yourself to the hard work, the pain, the fear of looking bad, right?
Like a easy example would be, hey, I'd love to get a little bit better at soccer.
Yeah.
I don't want you holding me accountable to that, Rob.
Right. Like, hey, feel free to hold me accountable once I'm already good at it and I don't have to worry about looking bad. Right? In the meantime, nothing to see here.
Right. I mean, but like that example is like, I don't want or need to be held accountable at soccer because it's just a fun hobby. Like I'm not trying to dominate the field. I'm not trying, you know, whatever. It's just fun for me.
Totally.
And so.
So I think that's the first key point is for accountability to work before we talk about structure and mechanisms and action plans. There has to be a pretty high level of trust. I have to trust that. Oh, there you go. You got a circle.
I literally just wrote that.
Dude, down. We should do a podcast together. We think so much alike on these things.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Cause you have to be willing to be vulnerable enough to let someone in your world. You are potentially going to look bad. You are potentially going to have misses. And I don't want to use the word failure. I like the word miss better. Like you're going to set goals and you're going to fall short of those. And you got to know that the person that is engaging that accountability with you really genuinely wants the best for you and isn't going to crap all over you just because you missed.
Fighting for your highest and best good.
Yep.
Which is also a Landonism.
Yep. So there's this two-way street of trust. I have to trust you enough to share my goals with you, right? And then you also have to hold that trust very carefully. And when there are shortcomings, when there are misses, addressing them, but addressing them in a loving way where it's like, I know you want to help me get what I want.
Yeah.
Right. So the trust component is good, but to hit a couple things here, we have to have a plan. For accountability to work, we have to have a plan. Yep. I don't know if you guys caught that, but we have to have a plan.
What do we have to have?
A plan.
Got it.
Yeah. So you will rarely find somebody who's a bigger proponent for quarterly goals than I am.
Yeah.
Because quarterly goals give us this context of, we have to do two things. We have to define what success looks like over the next 90 days.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are we going to be held accountable to?
Right.
Right. And it has to be, I love the acronym SMART. I'm not going to get into that. Right. But it has to be measurable. Otherwise, we don't know if we're winning or losing.
Yep.
Right. But then also, goals create clear expectations for both the performer mm-hmm. and the person monitoring the performance.
Yeah.
Right. So you need to have that clarity. Like, accountability sucks when there's not clear expectations and then I'm being held accountable to something that I wasn't aware that I was being held to.
Yeah. And that feels gross.
Oh, dude, it feels terrible. But when I put out there to someone else, hey, this is what I want and here's why it's important to me. And then these are the actionable steps I got to take to get it.
Yeah.
And then somebody checks in with me and goes, how's it going? That's not weird. It's very clear. It's very simple.
Well, especially when it's your plan.
Yeah. It's very empowering. Goal. Yeah. And that's the part, like that word empowerment is when it's mine, I'm empowered. When it's somebody else's and it's being forced upon me, I don't know if you're anything like me. I don't like anybody telling me what to do.
Totally.
That's why I've been at 1099 for 15 years.
Yeah. That's why I've been in therapy for 15 years.
Yes.
Marital therapy.
Hey, cheers to that. Any kind of therapy is good. Therapy is accountability.
Totally. It is 100%.
So if you have the plan, the rest of it starts to flow from there where you have the plan and then you have to execute. There's the actual doing of the plan. Then there's the analyze portion where it's not enough to just go blindlessly do. This is why people that set quarterly goals or annual goals and stuff them in a desk drawer and never look at them again.
Yeah.
You might as well have not even set the goal in the first place. Like it's just a waste of time.
And sometimes stuffing them in the drawer, which means that you took the time to write them down, is mm-hmm. further than what most people get.
Right.
Some people just talk about it like, oh yeah, I have a goal of, you know, losing 20 pounds and they just talk about it.
Yep.
But it's not written anywhere. It's not logged anywhere. It's not visualized.
That's right.
And so like writing it down is step number one.
Yeah. So you've got the plan, you have the doing, then you have the analysis stage. And the reality is if you took the time to set a goal and identify why it is important, made the action plan, did something, even when you fall short, you still learn so much because you go, wait a second, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And you figure out some things about yourself or about your external world or about, you know, the problem might have been your plan, not your actual execution.
Totally.
Like you might have set yourself up for failure by not planning properly, but there's all the lessons come from the analysis portion. And then the last step is simply iterate. Like take the things you want to duplicate, leave the things behind that you don't want to take with you. And then your next plan is going to be better. And every time it's, it's a little bit better and it's a little bit better. And it continues this process of learning and growth. So
love it. So good.
Two other things here, why this is so important is if you look at this process of plan, execute, analyze, iterate, which is what we just ran through, when you look at inviting somebody into that world with you, something magical is going to happen. You're going to narrow the gap between your performance and your potential.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a huge part of our version of success. It's not the only part, but this idea of I'm continuously getting better. And when I get better, I have more value to add to the world around me and I can make a larger impact. That's huge. And then the last thing I wanted to say before we launch into the Thrive Matrix here, I want to pause on this one for just a second. I think any good accountability structure for it to work well and why it's so important is you have to first establish what your identity is as a person or as a team or as a larger organization. You have to establish like, what is our identity? What do we stand for? Right. And so we've talked ad nauseum about, and we'll continue to talk ad nauseum about mission, vision, and values and how critical those are for the health of a culture and the health of an organization. But once you have those established, you need to have some objective components that tell you, are we actually in line with who we say we are?
Yeah.
Right. Because when we say we're this, but then our actions say we're something totally different.
Yeah.
We're we're in disintegrity.
Yep.
And oh my gosh, that is the quickest way to just ruin any culture that you're trying to build.
Well, consumers sniff it out real quick.
Yep.
And your team members do too.
Yeah. But then conversely, so that's the negative side of it. The positive side of it is when you get really clear on your identity and you have accountability where we're continually measuring, like, are our actions and our results lining up with who we say we are? That congruency creates this synergistic effect where 1 + 1 now equals 3 or 4 or 10.
Yep.
Right. And that's really what we're aiming for, because that is the bedrock of everything else that we do in our business or any business that we're in.
Yeah, it's so good. And just outlining the steps for that is huge, because I think a lot of times we go through life, whether it's in business or in relationship or sports or whatever, we get to the end. And if we've won, we don't know why we won. So at the end of the year, if in real estate, if somebody reaches their goals and it's December 31st, that individual is celebrating and like, this is awesome. I reached my goals. I made the money. I, you know, did the closings, whatever the goal was. But then on January 1st, all of a sudden the anxiety starts to set in because you realize you're back to zero. And when you look back at the previous year, if you didn't go through these steps and this rhythm, you're thinking, whether it's subconscious or not, you're probably thinking, I don't really know why I was successful. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was luck. Maybe it was the real estate gods smiled upon me. Maybe it was the interest rates. Maybe it was fill in the blank. And you're hoping that it'll happen again, which gives you all kinds of anxiety as to, can I do it again? I don't really know, because I don't know what I did to get here.
Or worse, rather than winning and not knowing why you won and how to duplicate it, you could also lose and not know why you lost
and
become a victim very quickly.
Totally. Yeah.
Right. Which we see all the time.
I was on the wrong team. I was in the wrong brokerage. Yep. I was in the wrong company.
I was in the wrong market.
Yeah.
You know,
interest rates were too high.
I was working with the wrong mentor.
Yeah.
I had that conversation with somebody today.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man.
Not at our brokerage.
Okay. Just,
they were interviewing with us.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of finger pointing.
Yeah, totally. And it's just sad because like the finger pointing ends up in a place where our interview only lasted 15 minutes. It got cut short.
Yeah.
And I hung up the phone just feeling this feeling of like, this guy's going to walk away from this interview. And we mutually agreed it wasn't the right fit, but he's going to walk away from this and he doesn't know what the actual problem is.
Right.
So he's very unlikely to go fix it. He's going to end up at a different place with the same problem.
Yeah. Probably for who knows how long.
Who knows how long.
Hopefully someone, partners with them to walk them through it.
Yep. Shall we move into the matrix?
Yeah,
unpack this?
Let's do it. I think hopefully if you're listening, you've gotten kind of a concept and an idea of why this concept of accountability has gotten a bad rap in the past, and then how to reframe it, how to think about it. And so we want to move into, okay, great. Now I've been sold on this idea of accountability. So how does it actually work? Like, what do you actually do in order to hold yourself accountable as well as be in healthy, accountable relationships with other people on my team or at my company? And so our version of this at Thrive is what we call the Thrive Way Matrix, right? And so the Thrive Way, that's a way for us to describe mission, vision, values, where we're going in the next 5 years, where we're going in the next 7, where we're going in the next 10. It's all the Thrive Way. But then we had to come up with a mechanism to evaluate ourselves and then also share this tool, as it were, with our entire team to say, yeah, this is the lens in which we look through to see if we're on track, mm-hmm. both individually as well as an organization. And it's really for everybody. It's for the agents that work with us, which we call advisors, all the way to the transaction team, to the operations team, me included. And so it's really for all of us. So since there's no visuals, I'll just kind of walk the listeners through it. If you could imagine just a grid, like an Excel spreadsheet almost, and on the left-hand side, you'd have top tier, middle tier, bottom tier. And just a quick word on that, every organization has all three tiers. Every sports team, every military, every church, every nonprofit, every company, for-profit, nonprofit, there's always going to be three tiers in an organization. There's even three tiers sometimes in a family unit, right? So top tier, middle tier, bottom tier is just kind of, you observe that everywhere. So that's on the left-hand side. There's four columns with this, and they all are subject to top tier, middle tier, bottom tier. And I'll give you the four columns and then we'll kind of walk through them together. The first one, we stole, right? Yep. We stole from Gino Wickman. So a huge shout out to EOS and the Entrepreneur's Operating System and the book called Traction. Mm-hmm. This is a trademarked tool, GWC. So I want to give proper credit where credit's due. It's a fantastic tool and it's pretty simple. It stands for get it, want it, and have the capacity to do it. And so you can look at any team member on any team, again, sports team, church, you know, wherever, business, whatever it is. In our context, it's real estate. We look at any team member and ask ourselves, do they get it? Do they get their role? Do they understand what their role requires? Do they understand what it is? Do they understand what we're trying to do through their role? Do they get it? Do they understand their place in the organization and what they're supposed to be achieving on behalf of themselves, as well as their clients, as well as the organization? The next one's want it. That's the W. And that's pretty simple. It just stands for, do they want it? Do they desire it? Do they wake up early, stay up late? Do they make sacrifices? Are they willing to lean in? Do they show up in their best selves? Do they want it? Do they really want it? Do they desire to dominate the role? And then lastly is the capacity. Do they have the capacity to do the role? And the capacity can get expressed in a lot of different ways. It could be, do they have the calendar capacity? Do they have the skill set capacity? Do they have the personality capacity? Mm-hmm. Do they have the background capacity? Do they have the mental capacity even, and emotional capacity? So capacity can be expressed in a lot of different ways. So get it, want it, have the capacity to do it. And so goes the theory that you can't really coach someone or help someone with the get it nor the want it. The get it and the want it, it's binary. They either have it or they don't.
Yep.
And I'll pause on that because, you know, on the want it piece, the desire piece, hey, we all need a little bit of cheerleading from time to time, right? We all need someone to come alongside us and go, hey, come on, let's do this. Like we can do this together. But what that's kind of designed to express is you have to have an internal barometer in your desire. And if you don't, the organization can't carry you.
Yeah.
It can't like help you want it.
Yeah. But and to speak to that, like both the component of like internally, we all have to figure out how to wind our own clocks.
Yes.
So to speak, how to push our own buttons, what want it to me is that capacity, or no, capacity is the wrong word because we're using that in a different context, but it's that ability to get yourself to do things you don't feel like doing when they need to be done.
Yes.
Right. Which is an unbelievably powerful quality. And then the get it component isn't just like, oh, yeah, sure. I get what you guys are up to. Got it. I'm just here for some leads. It's get it being like, no, the vision and the mission of the organization like speaks to your soul.
Like it resonates with
and,
you.
And you go, oh my gosh, I want to be a part of this. I want to be a part of help perpetuating this.
Yeah.
I want to build this with you. And so that's why we talk so much about, like we're super intentional with our language here when we use words like partnership, team member,
yes.
We, us, our, right? Like it all speaks to that get it component of we're all doing, yeah, we're in real estate, but real estate's not the thing that ties us together.
No.
Right? The better life concept is really the main thing that ties us together along with our shared values of executing tightly and advocating selflessly and living lightly, which, you know, then we have to put some components in place that tell us like, how are we doing on those?
Yeah.
Right. And so we watch very carefully what people do more so than we watch what they say.
Yes. Yeah. It's really easy to give culture lip service.
Mm-hmm.
It's super easy to talk about culture. It's extremely difficult. And I would say inconvenient, and it needs to be inconvenient to actually execute on culture, and sometimes very uncomfortable, both relationally as well as just professionally. And so there's components there that are not fun. But that's when you know when you're doing it right, is when it's not comfortable, it's not fun, and it can be difficult. So that's that first column, GWC, get it, want it, have the capacity to do it. So top tier is these people in the top tier operate, not always, no one's perfect, not like all the time, but most of the time they operate in a world of they get it in the sense that we've been talking about it, they want it, and they have the capacity to do it.
Yeah.
And so all three of those need to be true most of the time.
Yep.
The middle tier would be two out of the three, and the only two that can be there is the get it and the want it. Because what we said earlier, the capacity is the only one that we can work on. So for example, if they totally get it, they absolutely want it, they're working hard, they're showing up, they're leaning in, they're a team player, they're not just asking for things from the team, but also giving back to the team.
Yeah.
But they lack maybe some sales skill, maybe some background in real estate, maybe some industry knowledge, maybe some process expertise.
That can't continue perpetually, but that person is going to get a whopping amount more grace than somebody who's not showing up, doesn't
and
really seem to want it.
And we can help increase that.
Yes.
Like we can expand your capacity with those things.
Yeah.
We just can't expand your capacity to want it or to get it. You either kind of have that or you don't.
Yep.
And so the middle tier is two out of three, and the two have to be get it and want it. And then the bottom tier is either zero or one out of the three. And a lot of times, unfortunately, what we see is people that their one is that they have the capacity. You know, you look at people and go, oh my gosh, like it's so much talent, so much expertise, so much. Yeah, they should be crushing it. They should be doing amazing, right? And they're not, because they either don't get it or they don't want it. And so that's that bottom tier where a lot of times it's they actually do have the capacity, but they don't want it, and they don't get it. And that can show up in a lot of different ways. So, you know, very practically speaking, just to kind of put the rubber on the road a little bit, you kind of know, like you said, you kind of know when people are, like I use this term leaning in. How do you know if people are leaning in? Well, do they show up prepared to have a one-on-one with you? Do they track their own stats rather than you tracking them? Do they show up to team meetings? Do they support their teammates?
Do they show up to social events?
Do they show up to social events? Yeah. Do they intentionally lean in, you know, to the organization? So
yeah. Do they call you and ask for help, or do you have to constantly chase them when there's a problem or there's underperformance?
Right. Yeah. So it's sometimes we overcomplicate things to justify our inaction, and that takes root in leadership by saying things like, well, I'm not really sure because, you know, it's very subjective and everyone's really busy. And you just kind of have to pause yourself and go, nope, like this person hasn't shown up to a team meeting in a month, or this person never helps with their teammates' showings when they need it.
Yeah.
This person rarely is available for role play when other people want to, you know, sharpen the saw or whatever. So you just look at it and go, hey, there's a lack there, right? So don't overcomplicate GWC. A lot of times we can overthink things. It's just, hey, do they get it? Do they want it? And do they have the capacity to do it? And usually what I've found with this is that your gut reaction is the right one.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't spend too much time trying to rationalize one way or the other, because your gut's usually right on this one.
You kind of know. So. Yeah.
And then it's funny, GWC and Rise is in the next one.
Yep.
Rise, we did not steal.
We did not steal.
No. In fact, we actually came up with some pretty good stuff for these next couple.
Totally did.
These two are more subjective than the last two columns, right? So Rise is an acronym we use relentlessly in search of excellence. And if you listen to the episode where we talk about the business thesis, that's actually what we called our business blueprint, is the Rise program, right? Yep. And what I'm looking at here, what we've put here, is the way you pursue excellence across all areas of your life.
Yeah, that's how we define it.
We have the most visibility into how somebody performs in their business metrics, and we get glimpses into life outside of the business.
Yeah.
Right. But you do get a sense, you can just pick up on those things, like when somebody's not talking about what they're reading, what they're learning, when they're not talking about struggles in their family life, their spiritual life, or things that are going really well in those areas, when they're not talking about them, I don't know. I just assume, like, I don't know, are those things happening? Are they not happening? But it's ironic how many of the people we work with that are relentlessly pursuing excellence in their personal life, it just sort of comes up in conversation.
Yeah.
Right. It just sort of comes up when you look at their calendar. It just sort of comes up when you talk about how their last week or how their last month went in a one-on-one.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And that piece is pretty simple. Like the top tier on this one, the Rise program for us, we put relentless. And again, that doesn't mean all the time, perfectly done, every single day, every single hour. It means that they have a relentless appetite for this pursuit of excellence. Mm-hmm. That's what it means. And so, hey, I go through seasons, you know, a couple of days here, a week there, whatever, where I'm like, I don't give a shit about any of this anymore. Like, I just want to stay in bed, you know?
Yeah. Or oftentimes it's, they're more focused in one area and they shifted some focus away from some other areas that might start to slip or lag a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But when you look at them holistically and you go, yeah, but what kind of person are they? And you go, I would totally put them in kind of this relentless category. They're constantly pursuing this life that they envision, and they can be content, but never satisfied.
Yeah.
Content, but never satisfied.
Yeah. So some hallmarks of this one, because I think, you know, to make it, you know, it is subjective, and that's fine and that's good. To make it a little less subjective, I look for things, as I know you do as well, I look for things like, what does this person's morning routine look like? What sort of growth habits do they have built into their daily or weekly routines? Yep. Things like reading, journaling, nutrition, workouts, you know, are they attentive to their spiritual life?
This podcast.
Yeah. Well, that better be in there. It's also things like, ironically, these are the people that typically have goals.
Imagine that.
Right? So as much as we love to rag on Vasey, we rag on him because we love him so much. If you ask the guy to sit down with his goals, prepare to be blown away and bored to death because he has elaborate spreadsheets put together with his goals. And I'm teasing him a little bit here, but like you can tell just in the way he's detailed his spreadsheet, how important his goals are to him.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'll bet money on that guy 10 times out of 10.
Sure.
Right? So those are some of the things that we look like. And then you can see it show up in their work performance as well, both showing up to all the stuff.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, just how full is their calendar? How many leads are they taking? How many transactions are they churning out? What are some of their maybe kind of behind the numbers in terms of conversion metrics? How many appointments are they getting? Appointments met. Yep. Is our key metric, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
How many appointments met do they have on a monthly or quarterly basis? How consistent are they with their appointments met? You know, where are they on leaderboards in different either lead measures or lag measures? So it can show up in a lot of different ways, but those are sort of the things that we're looking at where it's not all gut feel. In fact, most of it's not gut feel.
Yeah.
Right? There is somewhat of a judgment call on like what is relentless and what is often and what is the bottom tier is sometimes or rarely. But when you look at those different categories, you start to get a pretty good sense subjectively based on their objective actions and habits.
Yeah, 100%. I think it's observable in behavior. We don't, you know, at Thrive anyway, we don't take attendance. We're not, you know, making sure that X, Y, and Z is done, mainly because you get to a point where you go, hey, I'm not here to baby you. You know, like we're not going to do that. But you kind of know the people that show up and that are there and that are available and that are being part of the team.
Yeah.
The middle tier is often, which the middle tier is in this context for the RISE program, is people that really do often engage this, but maybe struggle a little bit with exactly tactically how and where they should focus their energies. Maybe they're spread too thin because they're trying, but they're not getting the traction that they probably should be. Is kind of our definition of a middle tier.
Can I say something about this one?
Yeah.
100%. It just hit me.
Are you going to tell me that I'm middle tier?
No. No, I would never do that on the podcast. You know what I think it is with the
Did you give me a t-shirt that's
here? Now you're talking. By the way, we do need a Real Better Life podcast swag shop.
Oh, totally.
Like, how do we not have that yet?
I don't know.
Dude, well, we are middle tier.
Even if we're just the ones buying the stuff.
Shit. Middle tier podcast. All right, we're getting there. So I think oftentimes when I think of people right now that I would put in the middle tier, you know what I think it is I do think they oftentimes get it and they want it and they have the capacity to do it. I also think that sometimes they spend more time in the middle tier than they should.
Yeah.
Because they haven't really gotten clear on what it is they actually want.
Yeah.
Right. And so they kind of, if you think of bowling, like, you know, my kids still use bumpers because they're 6, 7, and 10.
Yeah.
Right? Which is hilarious when you watch a 6-year-old run up full speed and huck a 6-pound bowling ball as hard as they can, and you see it just violently careening off the bumpers. I feel sometimes like that's how people that haven't really identified what they want approach their real estate career.
Just go.
These massive, like violent swings. Sometimes things look really good, and sometimes it's like, oh Lord, I'm about to go in the gutter.
Come back. Come back.
Right. And so I think if you're sitting here listening to that and you're like, yeah, I spent a little too much time in the middle tier, that's probably me. I think the thing that will unlock that for you is getting really, really crystal clear on what you want, getting that down on paper.
Yeah.
And then you just might need to check who you have around you.
Yeah.
Like, if you are going to become the sum total of the five people you spend the most time with, you just need to sit down and take inventory of who am I spending the most time with?
Yeah. What am I spending? I mean, it's an age old concept. Who am I spending the most time with and what am I reading?
Yeah.
It's those two things.
Yep. Dude, okay. Secretly, my favorite one is the next one.
Really quick though.
Go ahead.
On the bottom tier of the rise, we call it sometimes or rarely. And I think these are folks that still engage in rise, but only when it's convenient.
Mm.
Only when it's simple, only when it's easy,
mic drop moment.
Right. Only when it's obvious.
Yeah.
They're not seeking it. They're not working at it. They're not trying to crack the code on how to pursue it. It's just like, yeah, you know, if it falls in my lap, great, let's do it. And so that's how I would kind of describe bottom tier is sometimes when it's convenient for you.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit selfish as well, especially when you're on a team.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And I know you love the common denominator of success as much as I do, which says successful people are successful because they form the habit of doing things unsuccessful people don't feel like doing.
Yeah,
which,
that's it.
Which is funny because they don't feel like doing it either, but they do it.
Do it anyway.
Even though it's inconvenient.
Yeah.
All right, BLS.
BLS, baby.
This might be one of the greatest things we've ever come up with.
I think so.
And we don't talk about it enough.
And it is trademarked.
Yeah.
Not really, but it kind of is.
Yeah. Sometime soon in the future it will be.
Right. So can I tell a story?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'll keep it really short. You know, Rob and I were kind of just riffing one day. It's probably had to do with bourbon. But, you know, it's interesting that when you look at any real estate team or company, it seems like, if you haven't noticed, everyone's number one at something. It appears that everyone's saying, well, we're number one here. We're number one here. We're number there.
And how come there's seven number one teams in my market? Right.
And maybe that's true because, you know, one team could be number one at GCI. Number one could be number one in recruiting. The other one could be number one in closings, you know, all kinds of metrics. That's fine. But at the end of the day, the rubber has to meet the road for the people that are on your team. And what we describe ours as in simplicity is full-time professional real estate advisors. We've been saying that for 15 years, full-time professional real estate advisors. And it's pretty self-explanatory. Maybe the advisor part isn't. To us, that just means everything that we're talking about is the advisor. And so but we
also use three additional words like top performing, committed to excellence, and pursuing growth.
Dedicated. Yeah.
Yeah.
All those things.
Yep.
So we were riffing and we were like, how do we quantify this? How do we actually make this idea of better life, which is our vision statement, real? How do we quantify? How do we make it almost numeric? And we stumbled across through this dialogue of this idea that whatever we came up with, we would have to be able to define it the same, whether we were in Denver or Charlotte or Atlanta, Phoenix, Austin, Dallas, wherever, because we definitely plan on growing and expanding. And so it would have to work everywhere. And one thing that we kind of tripped across was sometimes the people that we were talking to about joining our team, mm-hmm. you were talking to about joining the team, had a different idea about better life, right? And it was this concept of, well, my better life personally is 6 closings a year.
Yeah.
My better life is 8 closings a year. My better life is 5 closings a year, whatever. And it's kind of like, and I'm in a 1099 industry, by the way. So kind of this entitled, like, you know, don't tell me what to do kind of thing. I'm a real estate agent, which doesn't work at Thrive and doesn't work at a lot of teams across the US that are top teams, because while our team members are absolutely 1099 and absolutely independent contractors, they've volitionally chosen to join our way and what we're doing.
Yeah.
No one forced them to do it. They wanted to do it and they were excited to do it and they want to help build it like you were talking about earlier. And so this concept of better life became really critical for us to define it and go, whoa, 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 time out. Like, you can't be at Thrive if your better life is 5 transactions, because that runs in the face of this sentence that we just said, full-time professional real estate advisors. convince me that you're a full-time professional real estate advisor closing five deals a year.
Right.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Convince me that you're giving amazing service to your clients. And I know, by the way, being nice isn't amazing service.
No.
Amazing service is like knowing the market, knowing the trends, knowing negotiation strategies, knowing how to write offers that win, knowing what's going on in micro markets within that little neighborhood.
100%.
Like you have to be in it all the time to know those things.
Yeah.
Right. And we also found this correlation between a lot of the times the people who were maybe setting the bar pretty low on their definition of their better life were people who were chasing comfortability more than they were chasing impact.
Yeah.
So for us, better life was we had to put some objective metrics to continuous improvement in our personal growth and continuous improvement in our impact. And if we're doing those things well, that will show up in your results, which means that'll show up in your income.
Right.
And we got, I mean, frankly, just the punchline to all this is we got really hacked off with the fact that everybody wants to talk about things like market share or headcount or sales volume or how many transactions we did or blah, blah, blah. All this stuff that doesn't actually sell people more homes or yes. doesn't help the individual agent sell more homes, doesn't really help the client experience
no.
at all. And so on the client side, it's actually really easy to see your impact if you just go look at Zillow reviews, Google reviews, mm-hmm. Yelp reviews, repeats, referrals. Right? Like it's actually fairly visible to the general public yeah. and to us internally. What's not as easy to see is, hey, how are teams and brokerages actually doing in terms of the number of agents they work with that win? And what does winning actually look like?
Yeah.
So by no means are we saying that winning is defined by how many transactions you did and how much money you made.
No, not at all.
In fact, that's not the most important thing. However, it is a component.
It is a component, and it is a natural result of the first two columns. So
yeah.
if people and are doing GWC and Rise, then what we're about to tell you what the Better Life score is, it's impossible for it not to be.
Yeah, you get me all fired up about this one because the other part of it too is while people can talk about all these altruistic measures of success, which I'm all for, like your success should include what am I doing to impact other people?
Uh-huh,
and how many 100%. People am I having an impact on? And what kind of experience are they having? And am I making life better by yep. being a part of their life? So that stuff all matters. But when you talk about people's long-term vision and they talk about wanting to be more generous, wanting to provide more opportunities for their family or their loved ones, when they want to contribute to causes that they really care about, when there's other businesses they want to start to go impact the world, guess what? We identified that roughly 80 to 85% of the things most people want in their vision for their better life need capital.
Because, dollars.
Yeah.
Dollars.
Like, you need money to buy your time back, or you need money to start businesses, or you need money to be able to give away to other people.
Yeah.
Right. So money is not the end all be all, but we said, all right, that's it. We need to attach. So we actually thought about creating a website where yeah. I don't know if this is possible, but where we actually track teams and brokerages, what percentage of people at that brokerage are 25% or more above the median income for their market?
And there it is.
And so we actually put dollars on people's better life score, aka BLS. So in Denver, you know, roughly the median income is right about 80 grand. So we set top tier for better life score is $100,000 a year or more.
Correct.
Right. And it's funny because I think if you talk to people that have been doing this for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years or beyond, they're like, I don't know how I could ever work for 100,000. It sounds awful. Right.
Exactly.
Middle tier for us is 85 to 100.
Yep.
Because you're beating the median income, right? But you're probably still in that phase of like, you're getting by, maybe you're doing a little more than getting by, but you're probably not making significant headway on getting ahead.
Yeah.
If you're living in the Denver market,
yeah.
right? And I know we're making some generalizations here. And then the bottom tier is somebody who's under
85,
yeah. right? And we just look at that and go, with all the support, with all the opportunities, with all the training, with all the the culture and the caliber of people you're surrounding yourself with, if you can't figure out how to leverage that to make more than 85,000 in a year, something's wrong.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not to make somebody feel bad or guilty or less than, but I think that is a call to action to look in the mirror and go, what in the world? Like
if I'm not
taking advantage of these things, does it even make sense for me to be here?
Yeah.
Right.
Well,
something has to change.
Yeah. Cause then it begs the question. So where are you on the Rise program? Where are you on the GWC? Like something, it's an indicator. It's kind of like when you're driving your car and the gas light comes on. It doesn't mean that immediately you're going to run out of gas and that's it. You're stranded. It means, hey, pay attention. Like something's running amok here. Like you need to kind of, you know, plan in the next 15, 20 minutes to refuel. Like, you're like, right.
Something's wrong.
Like you need to get in.
Which makes a lot more sense. Can you unpack the fourth one? Cause this is like perfect timing for it.
Yeah.
It makes more sense within the context of the fourth category, which is sales performance.
Totally. Yeah. So the fourth one, which is sales performance, and this is the final one, we break that into three categories. It's production, which is for everybody across the entire organization for Thrive. Everybody. On leads, off leads, doesn't matter whether you're working company generated leads or advisor generated through Sphere and social media and open houses and all the other ways.
Yep.
Production is the first one. Conversion is the second one. And partner engagement is the third one. Mm-hmm. And conversion and partner engagement are somewhat set aside for our leads team.
Yeah.
And it's kind of specifically for that.
Because there's a lot more implications, right?
Yeah.
In how those affect 100%. Lead flow positively or negatively.
100%. Yeah. So for us, I'll just run through them. Production, we like to talk about it this way. The goal, the benchmark, the target, whatever you want to call it, in your first year at Thrive is 12 closings.
If you're just doing what you're supposed to do.
Correct.
You're not going above and beyond.
Right.
You're not crushing it. You're not working 70 hours a week, probably.
It's a good year.
You're working your leads. You're converting at an average level. You're showing up to sales meetings. You're participating.
Yep.
Like you're just doing what you're supposed to do 40 hours a week.
12 transactions in the first year. Preferably more. And we have plenty of examples of people that are doing 18, 20, 27. Mike D.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there.
Best year's 30.
Best year's 30.
Well, in the first year.
In year one.
Yeah.
Year two, 18 transactions because you're growing and you should know more and you should understand the process better and have less friction and have better sales skills and all the way around, just be more well-rounded and be at a higher conversion rate. And then year three is 24. So 12, 18, 24. And then in year four and beyond, 12. And everyone's going, wait, what? But let's unpack that for a hot second. So we go 12, 18, 24, and then 12 and beyond. That's our sales performance. That's our production targets. That's our benchmarks, right? And the reason why it drops at the end is because at that point, if you add up 12, 18, 24, you're at roughly 50 transactions. When you're at 50 transactions at Thrive, you're locked in to the Icon 50 Club, which means that all of your personal production is at an 80-20, and then your next level is up to a 90-10, which is pretty awesome. And so when you do the math, when you actually do the math on 12 transactions, the vast majority of which at that point would be advisor generated because of repeats and referrals, usually primarily built off of leads. You do the math on that and it does pencil out to $100,000 or more.
Easily. It's like even just in today's dollars, not accounting for future appreciation and things like that, you're probably around 200 grand at that point.
Right. So there has to be synchronicity between all of these pieces.
Yeah.
It has to make sense.
It also allows room for the natural progression some people are going to go through that are still pursuing growth and excellence. People that want to move into a deeper and deeper leadership role and focus less and less on personal production.
Yes.
Or people
investments.
Yeah, people that want to aggressively build their personal real estate investment portfolio.
And we love that.
Yeah. And that necessarily means they're dictating less and less time to their personal transactions, which is fine as long as you stay above 12.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So it's just 12, 18, 24. And look, at the end of the day, you go, can we all agree that if you do something once a month, that's kind of where we need to be from a minimum standpoint. Like if you were to go in for knee surgery, I think we would all agree that you'd want the surgeon to do at least one a month before he rips open your knee.
That'd be pretty bad.
Right. So, I mean, one a month is not, especially at year four and beyond.
And we traded some emails on this. This hasn't changed much from year to year to year. If you take out some weird exceptions, 24 transactions in a year puts you at roughly the top 1% of all agents in the Denver market.
Correct.
And that's out of 17,000 agents.
Yep.
And so I think if you're looking for an objective measure of like, hey, what does excellence actually look like? Well, if you're top 1% at anything, I'm pretty sure we can all agree you're excellent.
That's pretty excellent.
Right. And so if you get to the point where you've shown like, yeah, I've done it. I can do it. I know how to do it. I've done it. And now I'm moving into a phase of my career where I'm choosing to put more time and energy into other things other than maxing out my production.
Yeah.
Like, dude, we applaud that. More power to you.
100%. Yeah, totally. And sometimes that's in real estate and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's in a nonprofit that has nothing to do with real
estate. Which is freaking awesome. Like that's the whole point. That's the whole point of this. That's part of the better life.
Yeah, exactly. So second metric, conversion, is 10% or more. And we have plenty of people that are in the teens and in the 20s on conversion of our company generated leads.
We've had people that have hung out for significant amounts of time in the 30% plus conversion.
100%. Yep. Middle tier. Well, let me just drop down. So middle tier on conversion is 7% to 10%, somewhere in that range. Mm-hmm. And partner engagement is okay. Now, we kind of skipped around a little bit here. So let me pop back out to partner engagement. What do we mean by that? Well, at Thrive, we have significant deep-rooted partnerships that make our whole ecosystem work, particularly our lenders, mm-hmm. right? And I know what everyone's thinking when they're listening to this. Well, what about RESPA and CFPB and the laws and da 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 da? We vetted all that. Like it's watertight. And so what we need from our team members is for them to own and engage the fact that partner engagement supporting our lenders is absolutely mission critical. We can't do it without them. We always say when you're buying a home, you're really buying two things. You're buying the home and you're buying the money to buy the home.
Yeah.
Kind of spun together like the double helix that we all learned about in high school. By the way, it's the only thing I remember from high school. I don't know why. Anyway.
That's the thing you remember. Oh my gosh.
What are we doing? Is this a real podcast?
You just blew my mind.
Okay. So excellent on the top tier. Middle tier is okay. And what that means is, yeah, you kind of support them, right? And we do have metrics for this right now. So we can get into that on a different episode, but middle tier is you're okay at partner engagement. And then bottom tier conversion is below 7% and then poor engagement with partners. So that's how we talk about sales performance. Now, if you're listening to this and you're really listening, you should be going, wait a minute, what's the middle tier and what's the bottom tier for production? Because you guys said the top tier was 12, 18, 24, 12, but you didn't say what it was for middle and bottom. And we're not going to. And the reason why is because, listen.
I already know what you're going to say.
The goal, the target, the benchmark, everything in you and in us at Thrive is focused on 12 or more, 18 or more, 24 or more, and then 12 ongoing. That's the deal. We fall asleep thinking about it. We wake up thinking about it. We design programs around it. We think about it through the lens of marketing. We think about it through the lens of transaction management and how much we can take off an advisor's plate so that they can focus on sales. We think about that in terms of how the sales team is structured, what the training is, how often the training is, comp, graduated splits, everything. Everything is designed around this idea of 12 or more, 18 or more, 24 or more, and then 12 ongoing. And so we don't even really want to get into, well, what's middle tier and bottom tier on the 12, 18, 24. And frankly, if someone's asking that, it's a little bit of a red flag.
Well, and oftentimes when people are below this, it tracks back to the first two categories we talked about.
Yeah.
Like there's some discrepancy.
Yep.
There.
Misunderstanding, right? Potentially.
Yeah. And the one exception to that would be when somebody's brand new to real estate and they're really early on in their career and their learning trajectory is like they're drinking from a fire hose and they're just having trouble keeping up.
Sure.
That's not fair to them. They could absolutely have the capacity to do it. They're just overwhelmed maybe at the beginning.
Happens.
Right? Yeah. That happens. That's totally fine. But if you are a 3 out of 3 on get it, want it, have the capacity to do it, if you are relentless within the context of RISE, which have so much to do with culture and character,
yep.
Naturally, the 12, the 18, and the 24 should follow. And if they're simply technical adjustments we need to make, great, we can make those adjustments. But if we've been working at making the adjustments and we've been working at it and working at it and working at it and it's not working, like we've put objective like, hey, by this date, this is what should happen. And it didn't happen either because of effort, habits, or attitude.
Yep.
Right? Like that's a problem. And that identifies to us like, hey, this may be more than what we could adjust. Maybe we thought somebody had the capacity, but they actually don't.
Yeah.
Right. Which is really hard because you feel for those people. Your heart goes out to them. You see them putting in the work and it's just not working.
Yeah.
Right. But like, as long as you're top tier in those first two categories, the 12, 18, 24 should follow. And if the 12, 18, 24 follow, then your BLS follows.
Should be pretty healthy.
You're going to make the money. You're fine.
The nice thing about this whole thing, and we'll wrap up here in just a few minutes, but the nice thing about this whole thing is that it's meant to be flexible. It's meant to be holistic. It's meant to be, yes, there are standards and yes, we need to do everything in our power to achieve those standards. And at the same time, it does need to be human. Mm-hmm. And so if you're a leader at a company and you're thinking about designing something like this, I think I can say one of the mistakes that we made along the way was trying to get too minute, trying to get too specific, trying to quantify everything. And it's so obvious in rearview mirror, of course, hindsight's 20/20. But one of the big lessons walking away from that was when you run sales organizations and when you're in a sales organization, numbers matter. Like they do. The scoreboards, the metrics, it does matter. But if it's only the numbers that you're paying attention to and making, you know, hiring and firing decisions based on just numbers, good luck with that because there's all sorts of things that happen. We've had people here at Thrive that I won't name any names, but have had twins, right? Or have had serious bouts with COVID or have serious, very heavy family life circumstances.
Yep.
Right. And we're never going to, of course, be the organization that goes, yeah, sorry, you didn't hit 12 transactions, so you're out of here. Nor are we probably going to be the organization that goes, oh, you only did 11. Sorry, minimum's 12. You're fired. Like it's unlikely that that's ever going to happen. But when you look at a holistic kind of well-rounded lens and say, hold on, let's really walk through this. Where does this individual fall on GWC? Do they get it? Do they want it? Do they have the capacity to do it? Where does this individual fall on Rise? Where do they fall on the Better Life score? Where do they fall on sales performance? It does really begin to paint a picture of who's aligned and who's maybe misaligned. And I think what you're saying is that, yeah, when folks are misaligned, sometimes it's just a season, you know, it's a month or two, whatever. It's, you know, we all go through it. It's not that big of a deal. But when someone's consistently misaligned over a long period of time and has had the resources, the coaching, the support, the challenge, the accountability, the visibility, and it's just not advancing and it's just not working, it's just not going anywhere, that's not the better life for that individual,
right?
Nor for the clients, nor for our team.
Yep.
And so that's it's such a better way to kind of think through alignment and who is actually leaning in and getting, you know, the Thrive concept. And so there's one last column that I'll just run through, and it's engagement. So what do you do, right? So once you run somebody through this GWC, Rise, Better Life Score, sales performance, what do you do at the end? And so for top tier folks, our call is to elevate and celebrate them. So obviously there's...
Which is a form of accountability.
It is.
Accountability normally gets equated with consequences.
Right.
Right. But the part that gets left out is the reward.
Yeah. What about part. The fun stuff?
Yeah.
Like, it's awesome.
You get recognized, you get incentivized, you get promoted, you get leadership opportunities.
100%.
Yeah.
The celebrate piece can be expressed financially. It can be expressed in recognition. It can be expressed in increased opportunity. It can be expressed in increased
trust.
It can
be expressed in bourbon.
It can be expressed in bourbon. It's Rob's favorite form of celebration. It can be expressed a lot of different ways. Elevate is probably more misunderstood. Elevate is not the same as celebrate. Elevate means, hey, you obviously have achieved some amazing things with GWC, Rise, Better Life Score, sales performance. We want to recognize that. And we want to talk about what's next. Where do you go from here? Let's not stagnate. Let's figure out what's again, to go back to what you said earlier about narrowing the gap. Mm-hmm. There's always a gap. We're never going to perfectly, you know, align with all of our potential. And so the question then becomes for someone who's a top performer in all these categories, what's next to close the gap even further? So it's an invitation to a challenge, really, at the end of the day. So
yep. Well, and elevate too is when you hold those people up a little bit higher for the rest of the organization, for the rest of the market to see, it gives people an example that's worth duplicating.
Yeah.
Right? Of it's elevating, saying, we want more of this.
Yeah.
In our organization.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? And it's such a, dude, sales is such a monkey see, monkey do kind of business.
Right.
Right? That right. When you're, I dare you to go spend time around somebody like a Kyle Vasey for an extended period of time. I dare you to not get better.
Anybody.
It's going to be almost impossible.
Put Anna Eddie there and Brittany and yeah.
That's exactly
lots
right.
Of people.
Yep. We could list off dozens of people right now.
Yeah, 100%.
So those are the people that are setting the model for what you want to replicate. And then in the middle tier, it's soft challenge, right? So you see people doing a lot of things right. You also see some areas where there's maybe some incongruency. Hey, I know you said you want this, but I see you doing this, and this isn't working for you.
Yeah.
So let's talk about course correcting.
Like right? how do we partner together and get you back?
Yeah. It's very loving, very soft challenge, usually pretty easy, minimal adjustments.
Yep.
You know,
and then fine tuning.
And then contrast that with the bottom tier.
Yeah. Bottom tier, we would just call that hard challenge. So again, top tier, elevate, celebrate. Middle tier, soft challenge. Bottom tier, hard challenge. And the difference there is that a hard challenge is basically saying, hey, not only do I see you in distress, which is primary, it's number one, we care about our people, but we also see the team in distress because you're in distress.
Yep.
And so we've already, at this point, for a hard challenge, we've already had long conversations over months and months and months, resourced, come alongside people, partnered together, added more support from a sales management standpoint.
Action plans and deadlines,
sometimes increased mentorship. I mean, just lots and lots and lots of tools.
Yep.
And so that's already taken place when the hard challenge happens. And the hard challenge is just saying, hey, by a certain date, usually roughly 30 to 60 days out, we either need to see a lead measure be hit, and a lead measure would be something like number of calls, number of appointments set, number of handwritten notes, you know, whatever it is, just lead measures, something that is input oriented be hit, or we need to see a lag measure. Sometimes it's a little bit of the combination between the two, and a lag measure would be, we need to see a certain amount of appointments be done. We need to see a certain amount of people go under contract. We need to see, you know, some type of result driven metric. And usually it's both. Usually it's one or two on the lead measure, one or two on the lag measure, the output. And if those things don't happen at that point, it's kind of the last last stop sign, unfortunately, where we do have to disengage, we have to part ways. And that's sad and that's hard because we're such a relationally driven group. But at the end of the day, it's actually more healthy, more fair, and better, both for the organization and for the individual.
Yeah.
And we've done this in the past where it's difficult. We might be one of the only companies in Denver that actually, quote, lets people go. Because most brokerages, you can just kind of hang your license and, you know, do whatever you want. But that's not our flavor of real estate. And so that can be harsh, right? That can come across hard. But for the people that have actually journeyed that path and we've had to let them go, many of which I still have really good relationships with.
Yeah.
And they look back and they go, I'm thinking of, I won't name any names, but one guy who's like, I'm so glad I'm back in the industry that I came from. This is just me. And I had to test out real estate, and you know, it was hard to admit that I wasn't good at it. And frankly, I'm not good at sales, but I'm so happy now. My family is happy. They're less stressed. I'm less stressed. Like, it's just better. And you go, that's awesome. Like, that is the better life.
Yeah.
At the end of the day. And so as hard as it might be, we do have to do that. And hard challenge is the last piece of the puzzle.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes accountability is the most, the hard challenge part of accountability is the most loving thing you can do for people, even though it's ridiculously hard.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I take us home with three things here?
Bring it home.
Really quick. Really, really quick. We like actionable takeaways. So if I'm looking at three actionable takeaways, number one is get really, really clear on what you want and why. And when I say get really clear, I'm talking get out your journal and physically write it down.
Yes.
Right.
It has to be expressed physically.
Yep.
In the
then,
world.
Then it's real. Then it's in the world. No, it's not just an idea floating around in your head. Number two is create structure, whether you borrow the Thriveway matrix.
Sure.
Or you just adopt the components that work for you, but have something, wrote three things down, clear, holistic, which holistic means not overly objective, not overly subjective.
Yeah. Flexible.
Yep. It accounts for what goes on outside of work, not just work numbers. And it's actionable, meaning when there's misalignment, it's very easy to see what do I need to correct to get back in alignment.
Yeah.
Right. Which is why I love one thing we didn't identify. The GWC and the RISE components are very culture related.
Yes.
And subjective in nature.
Yes.
There's objective components to them, where sales performance and BLS are very objective and very execution related.
Yes.
Right. And so that's important, is that you have both.
You got to have balance between your pieces of your puzzle, whatever it ends up being.
Yep.
Ours is 50% kind of observations, some subjectivity to it, and 50% pretty objective, pretty calculable.
Yeah. Just to tie all the pieces together, when I say create structure, that goes back to what we talked about at the very beginning. Good accountability requires a plan.
Yeah.
A plan has to be a plan, goals and expectations. And then third thing is invite somebody in that you trust.
Yes. It's huge.
Yep.
So in summary, I mean, this is how we describe it. The matrix that we use, and again, like Rob said, steal it, weaponize it, leverage it. We would love to, it'd be an honor to be copycatted, you know, with this. But the matrix that we use is the lens we use to set, guide, evaluate, and champion our performance and our culture metrics. And I think that's unbelievably critical in any organization and for any individual who's looking to be excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Nice job, buddy.
Right on, you too. Fist bump.
Yeah. Good Monday.
All right, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with you.
See you guys.
Cheers.